session, January 21st, 2025, at 4 p.m. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hill, present. Commissioner Spence is currently absent, but may be joining us on Zoom. We'll call it out for the record if he jumps on Zoom. Commissioner Rome.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Stevens.
Here.
Please join me for a pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I ask for changes or addition to the agenda, if there are any. Would like to point out we have a full bunch of issues tonight, both advisory and action items, so we will be trying to move things along. Are there any changes or additions? Hearing none, we're going to open up the meeting for public comment. An opportunity to speak to the commission for 3 minutes on any topic.
No comments.
Okay, thank you. And we're ready for some advisory issues that we have tonight. And I would like to point out that item C, Pier 1 building generator update, may not take place. And we'll see if they show up. So let's begin with 6A, airport master plan. Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner. Obviously, we're coming to the end of a long process. Went back and going through some emails and realized we were doing interviews for the development team and the planning team 4 years ago. So 4 years ago this month and this week, we started this process. And now we're coming to the end, really just waiting on FAA approval for what's been submitted by Mead and Hunt. But tonight we've got here Crystal Walnuts from Mead and Hunt, along with Marika Armstrong, who's also online. And so they'll be going over a quick update on the airport master plan. So with that, we'll turn it over to Crystal.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. As Matt mentioned, this is the final part of our airport master plan and the findings of the master plan and the airport layout plan. I am Krista, and Marika's on the phone there. But I wanted to take about 15 to 20 minutes real quick to just go through some of the master plan items that we touched on. We've had three commissioner meetings in the last, so a total of four, where we had an opportunity to tell you guys about the projects that we've been working through with the master plan. So.
Maybe.
Sorry. This always, I feel like this always happens to me. Okay, oh.
That happened to everybody.
You just look silly pushing the button. So just a quick meeting agenda, go over the project, kind of retouch on the schedule as Matt mentioned. This has been a multi-year process. Looking at the preferred development concept that we came up with for all of the alternatives that we developed. The airport layout plan. I'm briefly going to go over some of the funding that we touched on from the last commissioner meeting, but a lot of that information is in the master plan document, so I know we're kind of short on time for that, but I can answer any questions that you might have. All right. So to recap the project, we started back in the summer, fall 2022, and here we are, 2025. But there's a few things that go into what makes up an airport master plan, and those are highlighted in purple there. But we first look at the existing conditions, what do we have at the airport, what are we working with from an existing stance. Aviation forecast, what demand do we expect? That is something that the FAA looks at after we develop it. Facilities requirements, what we can expect with that demand, how can we meet the expected demand? Alternatives, what do we need to change to meet and look back through the forecast and how can we meet that demand. The capital improvement project, a capital plan, and how do we pay for those changes. Land use, what are some compatible land uses, and the airport layout plan, what that's going to look like on the plan. So I did want to highlight those circles down at the bottom and the times that we met with you guys or met with for a public workshop for our advisory committee. July of 2022 was our kickoff, PAC meeting, and port meeting we did in December 2022, June 2023, and October 2023, and today, of course, and then public meeting in June and October. All right, so our preferred development plan. Actually, I think this may have skipped over. Sorry, guys. Oh, actually, I kind of already went over this, but what we're looking at for a master plan, just to kind of recap, it's a long-term plan that outlines how the airport will develop over time. It looks at current and future state and the aviation system as a whole. The last Astoria master plan was developed in 2008, so this was an update, and this is required so that the FAA can provide grant funding. So, sorry, that skipped over. So we looked at four different areas of change. Changes to the airfield, aircraft storage, aviation support, and non-aeronautical development. The items that we touched on are in each one of those boxes. I won't go too in detail, just for sake of time, that we've already gone over this in other meetings. But what we did is we took all of our preferred development alternatives and we developed our preferred concept. So this concept includes all of the items from those alternatives, from anything from the non-aeronautical development to a lot of the geometry that we had to touch on to get that to a standard with the FAA. You can see those in like the hatch areas of the taxi lanes majority. And then items noted in blue and the vibrant green is future buildings and future pavement. So what we do with that as part of the next step.
It's this one works over there.
Yeah.
All right, we're just going to go with this. So we end up putting that information into the airport layout plan. So the AOP, as we call it, was adopted and finalized in December 2024. Matt mentioned we're waiting for signature back from the FAA, and we're going to have some printouts for you guys for that multi-page AOP that you guys can have in your report. But the intent of the AOP is to show the preferred alternative and have that depicted. I know that this is hard to read. It's not for reading purposes. It was more or less to show you guys that this is a roadmap going forward and kind of combines everything that we have in the master plan, and then we have it in a graphic format. And then this is the roadmap for the FAA. They use it to establish what projects the airport's going to be working on. It doesn't guarantee funding, unfortunately, but it does put it on their radar, and by having it there, they know that that project is something that the airport's working towards. I wanted to briefly go over some of these individual projects that I mentioned and some of the funding. This information can be found in the master plan. There's a lot more that goes into the funding aspects as well as the monetary amounts that are put here. So no sticker shock, we can definitely talk through any questions that you guys have, but at the same time, the information is in a document and we can go over what some of the funding sources are, because it's not something that the airport and the port have to take on individually. So short-term projects, these are gonna be projects from These are going to be it's come up, 2023 to 2028. Project list, there was two items on there, runway 826 maintenance and a reconstruction of the apron for phase three. Those are noted in red. The monetary amounts are $2,023, but 4.3 was the total for that. The goal when we're working on prioritizing implementation is looking at the projects, determining the AIP, which is Airport Improvement Project eligibility and types of funding that's available, and then evaluating other funding sources, looking at federal, state grants, and things that are available. And we put those into these timelines based on how we can kind of dig it out and be able to fund it appropriately with FAA. And that can change. That's something that the airport has to evaluate on a yearly basis in their ASIP meetings. But that is something that we just try to kind of create a roadmap and then go forward from there. Midterm projects were the projects that were listed for 2029, 2033, I believe. It says under there, there has a project runway obstruction removal, fuel tank, adding a new fuel tank, 10,000 gallon jet A fuel, a taxiway A and B hangar development, and then the expansion of the FBO. The total that we estimated for that was 11.2. And I did want to note those hangar developments, those are multiple sizes, and they're depicted a little bit more in the master plan for what exactly those were, where they're located, and what sizes. Long-term projects, 2034 to 2045, I believe, or 43. Taxiway A relocation, taxiway B2 relocation, taxiway A3 realignment, and A2 realignment as well. So you'll see all of those in the black and blue. The number that was associated with that was 8.9. And then ultimate term, so we're looking at 2044 and out. These are a little bit of some of the projects on there can be any type of wish list type projects, but something that might take a little bit longer down the road. And so we have things on there like the electric aircraft charging and airport parking, or sorry, parking alternative for Neptune, and then looking at other things that we know are going to be starting to deteriorate down the line, such as the apron and looking at the taxi lane and pavement markings. So things that get some wear and tear over time, but then also some items that are going to be nice to have on there. The ultimate term, number on that is 77.6. The bulk of that coming from the taxi lane design and the parking alternative for Neptune, majority of parking alternative for Neptune. So, and then I just wanted to touch on this really quick, the funding participation, those numbers, we definitely know that that's a huge undertaking for Astoria, but there's funding for state match, federal, so the AIP program for entitlements and discretionary money. Those are going to be your biggest like source of funding and improvement, because those are meant and eligible money for safety, capacity, security, and environmental concerns. And a lot of the projects that we have listed are through that. State funding, we can look into Oregon grants, local match, and airport funds for revenue and bonds. So there's a lot more detail in the master plan on this, I can answer any questions that you have towards it today. Next steps for the master plan are going to be adopting official action for the master plan and then annual ASIP planning on a yearly basis for you guys to figure out which projects that you want to take on, what makes the most sense, and kind of using the master plan here as your guidance. But that's it. So
Yeah, if I could just dovetail on that a couple of things. So the ASIP is just going to be our capital improvement plan that we're going to be looking at individual elements each year. Depending. I think it's important to remember what the master plan is, that it is a very broad roadmap. It doesn't mean that everything that is in there is going to happen, or that if something isn't in there, that it can't happen. There are a number of moving dynamics with this. We're looking at, for example, the U.S. Coast Guard, their potential redevelopment. That's dependent on a lot of things with the federal government, what goes on with the Coast Guard. The EV is a big one. We don't know exactly how that's going to shake out, but we do have the planned infrastructure for that. And then one of the other important aspects, I think, to this was that when we're looking at redoing 826 is getting that runway grooved. Because right now, it's very hard for us to quantify what business we're losing because we are not allowing, well, the jets can't come in because if it's raining or if there's certain inclement weather, they will not come in here. And there's no report on that, on what we're missing. So, and then I think the other thing is that with any of these plans, what we're looking to do is making sure that they're just not something that's dusty that sits up on a shelf, but we're looking to take steps. And so we're already taking steps along that that path. Just even tomorrow, we've got Pacific Habitat Services coming out to do some wetlands delineation along the west side of the Electro building, so between Electro and the Coast Guard property, so that we can move that road. So rather than driving the road right down the middle of Electro parking lot, that we can move that around. Also looking to do delineation so we can do hangars next to Dock Bales, and then wetland delineation on the south side of Eero hangars to make sure that we can build there as well. So these are all in planning, and we should have some good answers within the next couple of months as far as what the next steps will be. So,
all piece of cake. Right?
Yeah. Super simple.
Just time $100 million.
Yes. Yes. So. I'll be around for after the meeting if you want to discuss anything. I can answer any questions for you. But
yeah. I think the next step. This is an advisory item because the FAA has not yet approved it. Once the FAA approves it, which should be any day now, we'll bring this back to the commission for formal adoption.
We are making matching funds in advance somewhere.
Depends on the project. I mean, the matching funds for multi-million-dollar
right.
The 826, those are all going to be dependent. One of the things that's good about the CORE program, so this is ODA's program, is that they have a number of different categories when you're submitting grant applications, but their number one priority is federal match grant.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have some larger project and we want to go to the state for matching funds, it will be at the top of their list. NODA has been very good to work with.
Good. Did I understand today they're going to groove the runways?
826, just 826.
Okay. I've heard that before. Remember this briefing. Yeah.
We're going to be grooving.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you for the presentation.
Of course.
Item B is the first reading of an ordinance regulating encroachment into unauthorized areas on the port property.
Commissioner, if you turn to page 38 in your packet, you will see that the ordinance for regulating encroachment into unauthorized areas. And so this has been a bit of an ongoing issue with the port for several tenants, where over the course of time, some tenants have started to utilize space outside of their leased area. And under the advisement of Port Council Eileen Aikens, in order to make sure that we're enforcing this in a way that's fair and that we have a basis for which we're doing enforcement for those encroachments, she helped us put together this ordinance, which outlines a process that we would go through when we have these scenarios occurring. And so it's all included in the ordinance. basically what we're looking at is that initially there would be a notice of the violation, which then would allow potentially for penalties, $100 per violation for individual subsequent offenses at $500, and then for corporations it would be $1,000 per violation and $3,000 for subsequent offenses. Either the penalty could be assessed on a per day basis or a fraction thereof if the violation continues. And so hopefully this is one of those ordinances we never have to really use, but given the fact that we have had some issues with this, I think the timing on this is good. So we're hoping we'll go through the first reading today. I believe by law we have to have at least 13 days between the first and the second reading. At the time of the second reading there could be formal adoption, and then the ordinance would take effect 30 days after the ordinance is approved by the commission. Do you have anything to add to that?
The only thing that I would add to that is that you might ask me why do we need an ordinance for this. Really it was to address some holes in our lease language. So typically the way that leases are constructed is that a tenant has a space that he or she rents, and outside of that, if they go outside the rented footprint, then there's a default notice that's issued by the court. And then they have 30 days to correct that default, and then we're back to square one if they address it. So what was happening is, if someone was renting or renting a space and they were going beyond that space, what was happening is they would be using that space, and we tell them, like, hey, you can't use that space, you have to get back within your footprint. And they would have 30 days to get back within their footprint, and they get back within their footprint, and then we start over again. And so it was just this merry-go-round that we were looking to get off. And that's what is really the genesis of the ordinance, is to get off of that so that we have enforcement immediately.
Would this be something like parking or junk type of thing, or can you give an example without names or companies?
Sure. It's just if someone has equipment, say we have a 10,000 square foot space that's been rented for equipment, and then someone's using 15,000 square feet of space, then like, hey, you've gone over by 50%, we have to pull you back.
Could be equipment, could be crab pots. Yeah.
Gotcha, that is.
Commissioners, have any questions? Well, we will move along. I don't see a representative from. From the generator update. So we're going to skip item C. Move on to action. 7A is byproduct recovery center. Readability study, update, and change order.
Thank you, Commissioner. Again, page 41 of your packet. We have today with us Alan and Abby Bisbon from Aquaterra Consultants to give us an update on the treatability study and how that's going. Maybe a couple of sentences about what went on with the meeting last week with the Danish contingent that was here. But the primary reason for this is not only an update, but get a change order approved by the commission for additional costs that were incurred by Aquaterra Consultants for really taking some professional expediency to make sure that some sampling was done that was not originally contemplated, and to provide some support for the Danish folks that came out to look at industrial symbiosis that was not originally contemplated within the scope. So what I'll be looking for from the commission tonight is an approval for the additional change order funds of $27,640 so that we can finish out phase one of the treatability study. Before that, though, I'd like to have Alan come up and just give you a brief update on what's going on with the treatability side of things.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. The port is taking a very progressive and innovative attitude towards their tenants that have wastewater problems. Proposing a center that will allow the processors to discharge their wastewater to this center and be treated by the byproduct recovery center in on the port property. Each processor having to treat their own wastewater would be extremely expensive, require technology they don't currently use, and would not yield good results. Having the port take care of this, you'd have one consolidated facility, it'll be done more professionally, you're better able to leverage good personnel when you have one large facility versus having four small treatment plants. It's going to be very difficult to find operators working for a seafood plant a couple months a year on not very large volumes of wastewater. The economies of scale of this project are significant. We'll be able to consolidate all the waste that comes off the processing wastewater into one place and convert it to compost, which we can sell to other parts of the state where they have deficiencies in soil nutrients. It will cut down water table contamination, and it will also make wastewater a lot cleaner. One of our purposes here was to test the waters from all four plants or three plants together, mix them together, can we treat them? Because separate waste streams can be treated. The question was, what if we consolidate all of them? Is that treatable? The answer is yes. We got reductions of organic material, about 80% of the organic material is extracted. Oil and grease, 100%. Bacteria were reduced by 99.8%. And we took out some of the heavy metals as well. So it outperformed from my own expectations. We had a protocol that we set up. What we wanted to sample and when. So we tried to take samples when all the plants were running under normal conditions. And one day I went to one of the plants and noticed that their wastewater sampling wasn't quite up to par. So I realized two of the samples we already taken were taken by the plant that wasn't quite up to par. So I decided to add two more samples because I needed a set of five samples to be able to know statistically what we're doing. So I added two extra sampling points. That's where the money comes from. It's for those extra two sample points. Because at the end of the day, I'm going to make some large decisions for you, or recommendations for you on the full-scale system. I like to have a good data to do that on. And so adding two more sampling events was a call for my professional opinion. The Danish collaboration is tremendous. I'm realizing it's a good way for the port, now that you're working on this kind of project, you have a voice in the industry. Wastewater treatment for super plants, and this is a great way of linking with people in Denmark. It'll give more higher profile to this project. It'll get the people in the legislature to maybe give money to this because it's a worthwhile project. So I had a chance to meet with the Danes, and they're in Florida where we're doing it. It's the first ever what we're doing, and they said it's tremendous. See the numbers, show them the numbers. I said it's good work. So I'm always open to suggestions. So if the engineers in Denmark know some things that I don't know, yeah, I'm not too old. Too old not to learn. I'll learn from anyway. But so far, we have the best technology that's available out there. It's going to make you a cutting edge, leading a voice in the seafood processing wastewater world and other wastewaters. So all I was asking was, could you cover the cost for the extra sampling? Which I think was warranted. And my participation with the Danes, I think, is well worth the investment because we now have contacts in Denmark. They do things that are slightly different there. They have a slightly different governance structure than we do here. They can get people to do things like putting recycled right bins. And they all have a let's work together, we're all Danes. But I think you rub some of that off to this part of the world and get cooperation amongst companies through the ports. It's a great avenue because companies can be collaborative and not at any disadvantage. And for the port, it makes sense to have one central facility for all your tenants. So you provide a value-added service to your tenants. It's symbiotic. It's everybody wins. I like projects where everybody wins. And this one, everybody will win. You will have a treatment sensor in state-of-the-art. Processors will finally get DEDQ off their back because they won't discharge to the waters anymore. They'll discharge to your facility. So it's a huge plus. I can't tell you how frustrating it's been trying to get the processes permitted with DEQ. I've been doing it for 20 years. Day Yang applied in 2015 for a permit. We're now in 2025. 10 years, no further ahead. But this, I think they're going to have more trouble blowing away because it's the port. It's not a private company. And the port represents four companies. So it's a much stronger force to be reckoned with, and I think they'll help me become more accountable than they've been so far. I'm also going to push to have them declare that the technology we're using is best practical available technology, which means it will be written into the standards that you must treat the water to this level. That will put you far ahead of the other plants that haven't done anything yet, and we're dropping down the throat. So, any questions?
Commissioner? Are you going to fill in anything else?
No, just a few things. I mean,
you said no.
About one thing. So I think that as far as the collaboration goes, and just to underscore what Alan said, with DEQ, there's a lot of public sentiment, a lot of public support as to what is going on with the Byproduct Recovery Center. And so one thing to remember is that Ken Helm, Representative Helm from Oregon, is introducing an industrial symbiosis bill that will be a directive to a Business Oregon to start funding industrial symbiosis activities just like this.
Excellent.
And we could be the first one.
Thank you. Commissioner's questions?
You think it'll work?
Yes, sir. I put my life on it.
Okay.
Put a lot of money into this, and hope we see a happy day when we start the system. I've got a lot of experience in these areas. We hold 3 patents on this. That's how much I believe in it.
We need a motion for additional funding of $27,640. Yeah, change order for the Byproduct Recovery Center.
And I put it?
$27,640.
So moved.
Thank you, sir. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. We have a unanimous approval. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
We'll move on to item B, which is resolution 2025-01, adopting an increase in boatyard rates. Am I correct that the current rates are about 5 years old?
Correct.
Carry on. More information?
Sure. As it says in your packet here, we began pretty aggressively increasing rates back in 2019. We had a 5-year plan. And so this is an extension of that. You can see on page 89, we have an estimate based on the increased multipliers of what it would mean for revenue over the course of the next 5 years, and it is significant. We've also included for your reference some comparative rates at other facilities on page 88 of your packet. We do have our exceptional boatyard manager, Brendan Stock, here as well. If you guys have any questions for him, but staff is recommending that we approve this 5-year schedule of rate increases at our boatyard.
We need a motion then to approve the proposed increases in boatyard rates for the schedule that's located on page 88.
Page 88?
Yes, sir, page 88.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Discussion. For the benefit of the public, did you notice a rise in inflation and cost of the prices of the commodities you need to run the boatyard?
Yes, I would say that there definitely has been, every local, I think, not just in the public sector, but also in the private sector, where we're seeing some of our vendors have to absorb costs, and therefore changing their kind of outlook on business here. I think this increase really does help us catch up rising inflation.
Well, I think that should be noted. We don't just raise rates because it's a whim. We need to get the boatyard to catch up. So we have a motion and a second for the discussion.
There is a plan, a boatyard plan, and to need the resources to make execute that plan to help us provide more services to the public.
Excellent.
In the future.
Excellent point.
And Brendan, maybe you can speak more to this, but it shows that our rates, even though we've been increasing for a 5-year period, may be a little bit low. Then in a conversation that I had with Brendan, he's constantly having to get on some of those tenants to get their work done and get back out of the boatyard and get hauled out so that we can serve other customers. But I think often for some of those boat owners, it's most cost effective to almost use our boatyard as storage before they go out and fish. And so part of this too is to get them in, get them out so that we can, you know, not have a long waiting list to get into the facility.
One of the things that we recognized was our daily rate for a lot of boats was about the same price as daily moored rate in the marina. And so guys would, like, here's a good example. The commercial fisherman comes in and he wants to haul his boat and get his work done on his maintenance work. And he's like, okay, I'll haul out and see you guys later. I'm going to go hunting and I'll come back in 2 weeks to start work on my boat. And at that time, we're full. And so to justify customers thinking before they take that action, we built in kind of a 90-day, because a lot of projects will extend the 30, 60 days that are significant. So we didn't want to tax those guys. But also on the 90-day, the people that are coming in to do their projects, they're going to have to really think about how to manage their project. Instead of just using a DIY yard for the finance show savings, they also need to also be do-it-yourselfers and manage their project well so that we can have plenty of space to have all our customers and be able to, as we're seeing in the last 3-4 years, take on the added business without having to make waiting lists or turn people away. So that was kind of one of our reasons behind the 90-day.
Thank you. I'm glad you elaborated on that. All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? We have unanimous passage. We should specify that was for resolution 2025-01. Can you note that? Yeah, thank you. Item C is Overbay Houseworks lease.
Thank you, Commissioner. I guess I'll introduce this and then you don't forget that. You can fill in. But starting on page 91, you have a copy of a new proposed lease with Overbay Woodworking. Of course, they're located out on the land side of our airport. This new lease would take them through January 31, 2030, so it's a 5-year agreement. They're actually currently on a month-to-month, and they've been on it for quite some time. I think I was looking, and I think since 2010, they've been just on a month-to-month. Within this, too, there is some additional space that they're going to be leasing, but they've, at least from my perspective, they've been a good tenant over the years. They've actually done quite a bit of work for the port. And so staff is recommending that we approve this 5-year agreement with Overbay.
Is Mr. Overbay aware of these figures and so on?
He is. He's approved this.
Motion and a second. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Have unanimous passage. And I don't see our maintenance manager.
He's not here. And I think his son had an event tonight, so he's gone, but we can handle it.
Okay, we can handle it. We have the technology and the personnel. So item D is computer system or link belt crane.
Okay, this is for looking at the link belt system that we have. The scale system on it is basically done for, and really there's only one solution to ensure that what weight we're lifting on that link belt is accurately portrayed in the cab. And so it's a sole source. There aren't a number of bids. This is as close to OEM as we're going to get. And so the cost for this is $33,741.74. That's what we're looking for approval from the commission for.
What's the problem?
Work.
It won't start?
No.
It won't operate?
The scale system doesn't work. The weight system was inaccurate. It stopped working. So we have to replace it so we know what we're picking.
Didn't we just buy this crane?
When did it quit working?
Oh.
When you bargained?
3 or 4 months ago.
We've had a couple of those in Mount Jones. Who's the man? Women's Howard Care Drivers. I'm serious. You're going to have to keep them boxes dry. Leave it sit out there in the condensate. And you can make them work if you dry them out.
They have dehumidifiers that you can re-put it in the cab and dry the moisture out.
A little damper it.
Oh, guy. I don't know what he's called.
And this is an upgrade, though, to the system.
Correct. And we've had it, we actually had somebody come out and take a look at it, and this is the recommendation from them, so I can try it.
Do we have indoor storage available for the crane? Shelter of any kind?
At this point, not.
I think electricity and my fire would probably be.
Yeah.
This is good advice from our two industry guys.
I move we approve the repair for the computer system for the link belt crane in the amount of $33,741.74.
Chairman, I'd like to see it dry it out a little bit. Well, we need a second order to add, and we're going to have it drying this morning. And it works.
Expensive computer.
You got to keep them dry.
I agree with.
A new one will do the same thing. Put a new box on it, it'll do the same thing after it for about 3 months in the rain. So.
Well, we could certainly try, give the college try, drying it out before you make that purchase if you think that's worth trying.
Has that been tried?
Not to my knowledge. I can talk to Joe tomorrow and let him know the feedback, and we could possibly test that out. I didn't speak with the folks at Triad. He did, so I would assume with having their tech out here that the information we're getting is accurate, but maybe we could try the hair dryer trick, and if it works, of course. I can ask Joe. I don't know.
I think that's a request from the commission to make an effort at drying the cab out, humidifying it before you make that purchase. So.
I think that's something to consider. We should table this. Are you planning on using the? Do you have immediate need for the crane? Do you foresee the?
I think we can leave a motion in the second in place. We're just asking.
We got a second. I didn't hear it.
Oh.
Oh no, I didn't.
Okay, sorry. I thought Mr. Hill that I just.
Oh, I didn't second.
I misspoke.
No.
I think we should carry on with it to expedite the process. We're just asking for a day for somebody to make a concerted effort to.
Yeah.
table this proposal. We have agreement on that.
Doesn't cost as much to try it.
I think we can
work it from.
We can get the motion in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Try it, and then if it doesn't work, then the staff can carry on and fix it. That's what
well,
I would
do that.
Pay for.
Yeah, if you would approve it, tomorrow I can talk to Joe.
Okay.
And
it'll take more than just a keg.
Yeah.
You have to let it dry.
They have a heater, a laundry, humidifier, that's what keep the cabin dry and moisture out.
Okay.
24 hours.
If it's been wet for any length of time, it could, it may be history.
It takes a while for that warm air to dry everything out.
It is electronic.
Yep.
And it is a computer system, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, let's go ahead and entertain a motion to take the action that Commissioner Rome proposed. I need a second for that.
It would be more of an amendment to the
amendment.
Motion.
Okay, right. Amendment to the
you
motion.
Approve the amendment, motion. Yeah, amendment.
Okay, yes, sir.
The credit computer system that tries to try prior to making that purchase.
Roger that. This is an amended through the motion. And I need a second, so.
If we do that, I'll provide a second.
Very good. Any further discussion?
It's worth a try.
You betcha. Mm-hmm. All right, so all in favor of the amended motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Amended motion. Unanimous. It's time for commission comments. Commissioner Hill.
I'd just like to say that I was really impressed last week when we had discussions with the various companies that are going to work on the bidding, so to speak, a pre-bid type thing for the master plan of the boatyard in the city of Astoria. There's a lot of work to be done yet, but there were certainly capable companies that made presentations, and all very impressive. And like I say, we've got a lot of sorting out to do on that, but things look pretty exciting for the future. It'll take a while, but with the hotels development and the fishing village that will happen sooner or later, things are exciting. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Mr. Rome.
I was also on the committee for the interview process for the master developer of the Central Waterfront, and the presentations were compelling. I felt like our staff zeroed in on the practicality, which would be money and experience, being able to bring to bear resources to execute, and applicants' capacity to gain permitting that would be needed to work on the project. So I thought that was a positive process. Selected party, which hasn't happened yet, is able to meet our aspirations.
Well, thank you for your work on that. Thank you, Commissioner Hill. Good report. Mr. Campbell?
I don't have anything.
I have to report that we did have a sit-down short meeting with the new chairman of the Finance Committee on streamlining our meetings a little bit in the future, and working on getting the agenda out. We do have a Finance Committee meeting on the 29th of January. That will be at 12 noon. Lunch will be served. attendance is only mandatory for the treasurer, but other commissioners are invited if you want to hear what takes place. That's all I have to report. Executive Director comments.
Thank you, Commissioner. My list tonight is fairly short. We had one of the busier weeks I think we've had at the port last week. And so just kind of piggybacking on the comments that have already been made around where we are with the development of the West Basin area, I would concur with what Commissioner Hill and Commissioner Rowan have already said about being impressed just with the quality of the presentations, the quality of the conversations that we had. And I think we had a really good interview panel. I do appreciate folks like David Reed being willing to come and help us out. I think he's a good resource for a project like this and is definitely a valuable voice, along with our consultants with Mark Popkin and John Southgate. And so we did debrief after the series of interviews, had some good conversation and set a plan moving forward. And so John and Mark right now are in the process, and I said just in the email today, we've got some responses already, but we had some follow-up questions based on our committee's conversation that we wanted to ask, so we've got some responses to those. Additionally, Mark and John are doing some additional vetting to make sure that things check out and the things that they are saying that they did are accurate, and so our hope would be that ultimately we would provide a recommendation to the full commission. Whoever the selected group is would be here at a commission meeting to give a full presentation of their plan, be a chance for the full commission to ask questions, and then hopefully get that approved and move forward. I think in the discussions we had with these folks, and the initial round of interviews was with kind of the larger scale developers that were looking at more than one component of the project. But I think there's a good understanding that we also have some local interest in various aspects of this development. And so once we figure out who that master developer will be, part of the port's job is going to be to connect them with some of the local interested parties to make sure that this project includes them and really has a bit of a local flair to this whole process. And so I think all of the folks who presented kind of understood that. Some of them actually had that as a part of their presentation, or included those folks as a part of their presentation, and others just acknowledged it that would be important to them. And then also the idea of, as much as possible, utilizing local contractors, local labor for these projects is obviously something that's important to the port, it's important to our community. So I'm optimistic. Whenever you do these things, especially for a large project, the worry is that you get very little interest, or the interest that you receive doesn't look like it's quality, or that you don't think can carry this out from start to finish. And I think we had, as a committee, a bit of the opposite problem, in that we had several groups that were highly qualified that, you know, I'm reasonably confident would have been able to pull this off. And so then it's figuring out, you know, who best pairs with the port based on, you know, what the port's needs are, what the port's kind of in-house expertise and strengths and weaknesses are. How do we best pair with a group to ensure this is a successful project? And so I think we are on that path. So that was early last week. That was Monday and Tuesday, I believe, that we went through that process. And then later in the week, we had the folks out here from Denmark. And so, Matt, you want to talk a little bit about the visit and the events that went on?
Sure. So this goes back to, you know, the genesis of this was really the visit to Denmark back in June of last year. Went over and started talking with the folks from McKellen Work Symbiosis about some of the potential projects that we have in Oregon. So I think it's important to remember that they came out and to look at four projects, three specifically, but four in all. Three of them were right in this area. So one looking at Fort George, the wastewater that's coming from there. One, the byproduct recovery center that we're contemplating on Pier 2, and then the BioOregon out at Pacific Seafoods, the other being Boardman Foods out at Port of Morrow. So it was, in my mind, really helpful and I think a very good foundation for what we're looking to do when it comes to industrial symbiosis, getting these industries together so that one industry's waste can be turned into another industry's revenue stream. So we had a number of meetings. We had a lunch on Thursday with 50 or so people there, and you know, we had city managers, county managers there, mayors, people from DEQ, legislators, legislators' offices, those types of things, helping them to understand the importance of industrial symbiosis for development in Oregon. And again, the fact that we have a number of these projects centered right here in this area is, I believe, very remarkable. So we had Per Muller, Bjorn Sorensen came over. This is all really coordinated with the help of a couple of different agencies. One is the Center for Sustainable Infrastructure from Rees Roth, based up in Washington. So he coordinated this along with Melanie Olson in Business Oregon, funded a lot of this. So really have to give a shout out to those folks in bringing these experts over to give us some good expertise and some information and some suggestions, recommendations on how we might be able to pull this off. So Friday was, to me, the kind of culmination of all this, the best part of it. And then it was very focused for about 4 hours, just what's going on at the port, just what's going on with the Byproduct Recovery Center. So we had 20 people in a room just talking about the challenges facing the seafood processors, the regulatory issues that we're dealing with, and just having a lot of back and forth, not just presentations, but just back and forth for hours. And it was remarkably effective and I think highly productive. So you know, at the end of this, I think it's a testament to us that even Pam Mola came over and said, you know, that what we were able to accomplish on Friday was, in his mind, remarkable. Because we have now a list of items that we need to do next, our task lists, what we need to do as far as resource mapping for everybody in the county, all the different industries in the county, and then who we're going to be able to pull together to start combating the kind of regulatory hurdles that we have been, you know, faced with. So going again to what Ken Helm said, what he's putting forth in February with this industrial symbiosis bill, it's going to be a really good starting point for us, but I think it's important that when we really came away from this, one of our takeaways was that instead of each industry trying to tackle the regulatory issues on their own, we need to come together as industry, period, and address this DEQ. So not just the seafood processors, not brewers, not agriculture, but everybody coming at DEQ with a different language about what it means to be symbiotic. So, yeah, again, very effective, very productive, and just looking forward to the next steps.
Was DEQ's participation voluntary, or are they going to charge us for it? Serious question.
They were invited to the lunch, which was just a lunch and learn. They were kept out of the individual discussions because they were not invited.
We'll charge for eating.
Were they curious?
What?
Were they curious?
You know, they charge every time they come up here.
No.
No?
No.
Of course not.
Thank you. That it?
The only other thing I had on here, I was actually just out at the East Basin a few hours ago, and there's pretty significant progress on removal of the causeway. It's quite different out there, so Ferguson's doing a good job of moving that project forward. And so I think that's all that I had. I didn't know if Alan had talked just briefly about it, but he was also an integral part of this event on Thursday and Friday. So I know, Alan, did you have any additional comments on the whole event?
I do, if you don't mind. DEQ is looking to minimize their workload. They want to put permits that are just simple to put out no thought behind them, no accommodation of the receiving environment, no accommodation of what the companies are trying to do. We're trying to be very progressive in our approach. We're trying to recover as much nutrients as we can out of the wastewater. But if it doesn't meet their artificial numbers, we won't get a permit. So what we're trying to do is something radical. We're going to do a whole DQ to science and good science and engineering. If what we're proposing makes good scientific sense, then the permit should be written that way. But they've forgotten what good common sense is. The regulations came out in 1974 from EPA, 50 years ago. So I challenged EQ, I said, look, these are 50 years old. They said, yeah, they're tried and true. Tried and true, they're 50 years old. The technology has changed since then. So that's the kind of mentality we're up against. It's no inclination towards helping a situation. And on the top of it all, they sent fines out. The port got fined for stormwater, we got fined for stormwater. The guy comes out and goes, you see the scale here? That's now wastewater, because there's a fish scale on. So we just like to have a slightly different approach to permitting. We're committed to a sustainable future, they should be too. If you just do their job, you'd be happy.
You won't get in any argument here. Director Isom, is there any movement with the city of Warrenton and approving our offsets for Pier 2? The estuary?
I don't have anything to report other than to say we are working on it and there are a lot of conversations being had at this point. And I'm really thankful, especially from some of the local leadership that's been very supportive of the port in this matter. And so, as you're aware, we do have two applications in to the city of Warrenton that eventually, I don't know if we have a date yet for the hearing, but will be heard by the city of Warrenton Planning Commission. And so we are doing some strategizing for how we're going to move that through the system. I know just in feedback that I've heard, there's a lot of folks like in the fishing community that are willing to step up and provide testimony if need be. I think sometimes that, you know, having some strength in numbers and having significant folks in the community who are supporting this project, I think could be helpful.
Constituents in the voting public, yes. Do they meet once a month, Planning Commission, do you know?
I'd have to look at their calendar.
My point would be, if that happens before our next meeting, can you get word out to the commissioners, because I sure would like to attend and provide support to you. Thank you. Any further questions or discussion with the director? Hearing none, our upcoming meeting dates, regular session, February 4th, 4 p.m., workshop session, February 18th, 4 p.m., and as I mentioned, we'll have a finance committee meeting